Well, it used to be really easy to listen to music in your car. You just turn on the stereo. But now you have to sync your phone to the stereo. You have to act like this matchmaker. Phone, please talk to my stereo. Stereo, please talk to my phone. And when you finally get it working, my wife will jump in the car and her phone kicks off my phone off the stereo. And now we're arguing over whose music we're listening to. I'm saying, this is coming from your phone. But she says, no, it's your phone. I say, no, it's your phone. Get off. And when she finally gets off the stereo, then she makes a phone call. And her phone call would kick my phone off their stereo again, and the whole car has to listen to her phone call. And I think, ah, when did life get this stressful? And all of life is stressful. Welcome again to our Feb Talk series. In this month, we're doing a series called A Road Map to Life. And today is week three, talk three. And our question is this: anxiety. How do I escape anxiety? And it's a great question, because right now, anxiety, depression, they are at epidemic levels. It is the number one reason Australians will see a GP now. It has overtaken the common cold for the first time in the history of Australia. And yet, it's puzzling, isn't it? Because if we were to be born any time in the world right now, it should be today. Because right now, we live longer, we own more things, we have free Wi-Fi at McDonald's, but somehow we're anxious, we're depressed, and we're stressed. So our question is this: how do we escape anxiety? And I'm going to try to answer this now in the form of a 20-minute talk, followed by some question and answer from you guys. And anxiety belongs on a spectrum of mental health. And mental health isn't something that's binary, you're either well or you're sick. But really, there is a spectrum of mental health. So it's good to think of it as a mental fitness tank. Just like in physical fitness, we can be fit, but we can still get sick. We can be mentally fit, but still get sick. But there are things that we can do to fill up our mental fitness tank, and there are things that will empty our mental fitness tank. So in the first half of the talk, let's look at this. Things that will empty our mental fitness tank and make it more likely that we will break down. And here I suggest at least three things. Number one is this. We live in a culture of meritocracy and perfectionism. Well, what do I mean by that? Well, a few years ago, I ran in the Sydney Marathon. And it was early in the race, and I thought, well, let's just go to the toilet because it's a long race. I've got plenty of time to catch up. But when I came out of the toilet, there was no one around. And so I looked for a race official. I said, where is everyone? Am I coming last? He said to me, are you in the race? And he saw the bib on my thing, and I said, yeah, I'm in the race. He said, you are last. You are dead last. There's no one in front of you for miles. I thought, wow, how about that? There are thousands and thousands of people running today, and I'm the guy coming last. That is not easy to do. It's easy to be up the front, but I'm last, like numero last. And I thought, they should give me a trophy for coming last, but they didn't give me a trophy, because we don't give trophies to people come last, because this is what we call a meritocracy. You have to earn your trophies. You have to earn your success. That is a meritocracy. So we have to earn our qualifications. We have to earn our job. We have to earn our possessions. And we are also told we can be whatever we want to be. So we can be perfect. So we should be able to make the perfect sourdough. We should have the perfect body. We should have the perfect holiday. We should have the perfect job. We should have the perfect family. In fact, you should be perfect. And because you can be anything you want to be, and if you're not perfect, well, that's because you didn't try hard enough. You failed. The second thing that will empty our mental fitness tank is this: fear of missing out. We're always restless, looking for the next big thing. New Year's Eve is always the most underwhelming day of the year, because we're always looking for the perfect party. And we go from party to party to party, looking for something that's not there. We are restless. This is Sarah Wilson in her book, First We Make the Beast Beautiful. She describes her struggle with mental health. She herself was a successful editor of Cosmo. She was behind the I Quit Sugar campaign, but she's always struggled with mental health. And she says anxiety is like, she said, you know, it's that feeling that a dog has when they're always circling a cushion, looking for exactly the right spot to settle down on, but they can't find it, so they're always circling. And she says that's what it's like. You're restless, always looking for the next thing. And that's our lives too. We are restless. We're never present. We're never in the moment. That's why we're always on our phones. Maybe there's something, somebody out there that's more interesting than what's going on in front of me right now. And even if we find what we're looking for, it's not quite what we thought it would be. This is Jill Stark, ABC Australian journalist and writer, and she wrote this book, Happy Never After, and it describes her experience of when, in her previous book, she wrote it, boom, it became the number one bestseller. That's it. She had climbed the mountain, but that sent her into a spiral of depression. And apparently this is really common with all authors. You find what you're looking for, but it wasn't quite what you thought it would be. So we're always restless, looking for the next thing. The number three thing that empties our mental fitness tank is this. Our lives are maxed out. We cannot squeeze any more into our lives right now. This is a nose wax kit. Yes, it's a thing. And I'm thinking, oh man, it's hard enough getting ready in the morning. And now this is one more thing I have to do. Ah. As you know, I have three young boys and our lives are maxed out. Let's see if I can get this right. Monday night is martial arts. Tuesday night is clarinet lessons. Wednesday night is AFL. Thursday is cricket and band. Friday is youth group. Saturday is Saturday sport. Our lives are maxed out. We cannot squeeze any more into our week. And even then someone will say, your kids aren't doing Chinese. They're not learning Chinese. I'm sorry, but they have to do a foreign language. Otherwise, the two parts of the brain won't talk to each other and they'll be dumb. Someone else will say, oh, clarinet, I'm sorry, but the clarinet is not a real instrument. Your boys need to be doing the piano because that's got the two clefs happening and you're doing the two hands thing. I'm sorry, but they do need to be doing the piano. So I think, wow, we are maxed out. And even then, we feel like we're not doing enough. When I was a junior doctor working in a major public teaching hospital, this is what a mobile phone looked like. It was heavier and bigger than a car battery. And because it was so big and so rare, only one doctor in the department got to take it home. Only one doctor in the whole department was on call. Only one doctor was contactable. The rest of us were uncontactable after hours. Yet now, we're all contactable. We're always on call. And more than that, worse, our working lives have changed. We're now working from home, or as people say, no, it's more like we're living at work. And now both partners are working. We're maxed out. We have to do the school drop-off, the school pick-up, the daycare drop-off, the daycare pick-up. We are maxed out. And because of Saturday sport, weekend traffic is worse than weekday traffic. Our lives are maxed out. And so we turn up to work on Monday, exhausted from the weekend. Whoa. So they're the things emptying our mental fitness tank. So what things can we do to fill our mental fitness tank? Well, we just heard that story in the Bible. And in that story, we heard the story of Mary and Martha, who are sisters. And they decide to have Jesus over to their place for a meal. And as you know, every year when I do these talks, I look for a picture on the internet of someone who I think, this is what Jesus would look like if he came here today. And this year I'm going with this picture because Jesus was not an Anglo. He also probably was a little bit podgy because the Bible says he liked to do his eating and drinking. He was also cutting edge, iconoclastic, maybe upset a few people. Anyway, Mary and Martha have Jesus over to their place for a meal, and Martha is stressed out. She's maxed out. She's busy. She's running around. But Mary, whoa, she's just chilled. She's in the moment. She's present with Jesus, which just freaks Martha out all the more. So Jesus goes to Martha and says, "Martha, Martha, Martha." So what can we learn from this story? Well, here I want to suggest at least four things. Number one, we don't have to be perfect. It doesn't have to be perfect. I love how when children draw, this is what their drawings look like. They are not perfect. I'm sorry, that is not what a human being looks like. But they are having fun. And I said to Andrew Barsley, who used to be an arts teacher, how come we can't draw like that anymore? As grown-ups, we cannot draw like that. And he said, yes, because grown-ups, they lose playfulness. Instead, we go for literalism and perfectionism. We're trying to make our drawings perfect, and we lose something there, don't we? I love quoting this guy, Will Storr, UK journalist. His book is called Selfie, How the West Became So Self-Obsessed. And in this book, he's actually trying to answer the question, why is anxiety, stress, and depression sky high disproportionately in the West? And he thinks it's because we have created for ourselves a culture of self-perfectionism. Well, where did this culture of self-perfectionism come from? Well, it all comes down to this unchallenged mantra that we have in the Western world. And the unchallenged mantra is this: I am perfect, and you need to accept me for who I am. And it sounds like a great mantra, but the unintended negative side effect is this: it has created a culture of perfectionism where we have to prove to others and to ourselves we are perfect, so you better accept me for who I am. And it's unsustainable, and it's led to stress, anxiety. It has emptied our mental fitness tank. Instead, Jesus comes and the Bible comes and they flip this around, because this is what Jesus says: Jesus is perfect, so I don't need to be perfect. So I don't need to pretend I'm perfect. Now, Jesus has got it. He's perfect. And Jesus accepts me for who I am. So it doesn't matter whether you accept me. It doesn't matter whether I accept myself. Jesus accepts me just for who I am. And this is what Mary discovers. And if we too discover this, we can chill. We can rest. We can discover shalom and peace. Number two, only control what we can control. In sports psychology, they call it this: control the controllables. Only control what we can control. Now, my wife is a great driver, years of experience, great driver, but I'm a horrible passenger when she drives because I am just freaking out. What are you doing in this lane? I would have been in this lane. Why are you going this way? I would have gone this way. What are you turning right here for? I would have turned left. I need to relax. Just control what I can control. Put my seatbelt on. I can control that. Play with a visor. I can control that. But relax, because she's got it under control. Let her control what she can control and only control what I need to control. See, in life, we've only got three choices. Choice number one: our lives are out of control. Nobody's in control. There's no one behind the wheel. That's choice number one. Choice number two is, I have to control everything. I have to be behind the wheel. Choice number three is this: God is in control. I only have to control what I can control and leave the rest to God. And if we discover this choice, it's actually a very wise choice, because if we think about it, we actually cannot control most of the big, sweeping, significant things that happen in our life. Think about it. We can't control which family we get born into. We can't control what country we grow up in. We can't control what schools we get sent to. We can't control what questions come up in the exam. We can't control the economy. We can't control the health of our parents. And yet these things are profound. profoundly significant on the course of our lives, so we can discover this peace where we say, you know what, I only need to control what I can control and leave the rest to God. God's got it. God's in control. Can I trust him that he's in control and I just control what I need to control? Number three is this. We need to practice healthy habits. In the same way there are healthy physical habits, there are healthy mental habits that we need to build into the rhythm and routine of our lives. And here I've learned a lot of this from a podcast called Bigger Questions. And in episode 177, they interviewed Dr. Jenny George. And she answers the question, how can I be mentally fit? And she says a lot of things. But one of the things she does is this. She says we need to build into our routine these healthy habits of sleep, exercise, mindfulness, outdoors and nature, giving, being generous, thankfulness, purpose, meaning, forgiveness, prayer. And at this point we go, yeah, I've heard this all before. They all make sense. They work. I know I should be doing them. But as I thought about it, as I looked at the list, I thought, wow, you know, if we have a Christian faith, we do these things not just because they work, but they give us a truth foundation for why they work. Sleep and exercise are so important. Why? Because God has given us bodies and bodies matter. Even Jesus had a very healthy sort of sleep exercise routine going on. Mindfulness. This is what Jesus is telling Martha. Look, Mary is present. She's mindful. She's in the moment. Outdoors and nature. Well, this makes sense if there's a creator God who has programmed beauty and imagination into nature. Giving. They say generosity is one of the best things we can do for our mental fitness. Well, this only makes sense if there's a giving, generous God who's behind the universe. Thankfulness. Everyone's saying, you know what, if we're just thankful, we'll be so much more mentally fit. But this only makes sense if there's someone to say thanks to, a God who we can thank. Purpose and meaning. We looked at this last week. If we can just know there's a reason, somewhere we're going, well, this makes sense. If there's a design, a designer, a God, a loving personal God behind the universe. Forgiveness. Well, we can only forgive if we ourselves have tasted forgiveness, because if there's a God who forgives us, well, now we too can forgive. And prayer. Everyone's talking about prayer. Apparently during COVID, 20, 40, 60% more Australians were praying than ever before. Well, this only makes sense if there actually is a God we're praying to. And number four, what is your ultimate value? What is of ultimate value in our life? And we all know this trick. When we travel in unsafe places, we carry a fake wallet. So if someone robs us, we can happily give them the fake wallet because we didn't lose anything of value because we still had what was of ultimate value hidden somewhere else. My brother once borrowed my car and he had a crash. And the first thing I would do was ask him, how's the car? What's the car like? But no. I knew to do the right thing. I asked him, how are you? Because think of it, the car's not of ultimate value. Cars come and go. My brother is of ultimate value to me. What is of ultimate value in our life? What things can come and go and what things do we need to hang on to? In this story, Jesus has said, you know what? Mary has discovered what's of ultimate value. And it's Jesus, the Son of God, who became one of us. He dies for us. He lives for us. He lives inside of us. And we can live for him as he lives for us. Just think about it. Everything else will come and go. Our health will come and go. Jobs will come and go. Friends will come and go. But we'll always have Jesus, what's of ultimate value. I get a lot of parenting courses, and most of them just say the same thing. You know what your kids need? In the end, your kids don't care whether you took them to the Easter show or not. They don't care whether you took them to the museum or not. They don't care whether they learn a musical instrument or not. This is what your kids really care about. They need to know, are they loved and are they secure in your love? That's all they need to thrive. And we know we're loved by Jesus. He loves us so much, he died for us. And we know our relationship with him is safe. It's secure. We'll always have what's of ultimate value. Now, do you remember our original question? It was this: anxiety. How do I escape anxiety? My boys love playing Minecraft, but I only just discovered, as you probably know already, there are two modes to Minecraft. There's survival mode and there's creative mode. It's survival mode. It's crazy. You have zombies. You can fall down big holes. You can die. In creative mode, you just chill, you relax, you're in the moment. You're creating, you're using imagination, you're making beauty. We too have a choice. Are we in survival mode or are we in creative mode where we're just in the moment, in the presence of Jesus, glorifying Him, using our imagination, creating beauty, worshiping Jesus, and just being present. Well, I hope you got something out of that talk. I'm looking forward to question and answer time. I'm going to hand it back to...
Well, thank you again, Sam, for another great talk.
Thanks for having me.
Such a big issue for us in our world today. Like you pointed out, anxiety now overtaking...
The common cold. For the number one reason you'd see your GP.
Yeah, and I think it doesn't surprise us because we all resonate with that, especially with COVID and, like, I guess the increased anxiety that is there in the media and there throughout society. So, yeah, thank you for taking us through this really important topic. And some questions are coming in. So first question here is, how do you deal with having anxiety with your faith? How do you deal with having anxiety with your faith?
Wow, yeah. So if we have anxiety with our faith, you know what? We would not be the first ones. And I love the Bible. And I was sharing this morning, every second year I take myself through that BibleInOneYear.org program where I read the whole Bible. And I get to read the Bible warts and all. Not all the sanitized stuff that you only get in Sunday school where it's only David and Goliath and, you know, Noah happily in his ark. You read the whole Bible warts and all. Almost every major Bible hero there went through anxiety, doubt, crisis of faith. So I think it's very, very normal. And almost we should be a bit worried if we don't have a crisis or anxiety of faith. So I think, one, it's normal, but I don't want to belittle it. But just go through the Psalms. Read the Psalms. I was sharing this morning, when we read the Psalms in the Bible, we think we sing the Psalms, but it seems like we selectively pick out the happy two verses out of 10 from the Psalms, and the other eight verses are miserable. The person is miserable. Whoever's writing the Psalms is in agony, is crying out for help. His or her friends hate him or her and want to kill them. They doubt God. Where are you? I thought you were a good God. So there's this real crisis. And then in the end, the psalmist usually hangs on to only one, maybe two things. And that's how they navigate their crisis of faith. Number one, they look at God's past record. Like, okay, I don't understand what's going on right now, but I just know this. I know this. I'm going to hang my faith on this. In the past, I know you did this. And I can hang my faith on the future, that in the future I know you will do this. And as a Christian too, you know, we will go through crisis, but we can hang our faith on just two things. One, we know in the past God loves me. He loves me so much. Jesus died for me and rose from the dead. And I know in the future Jesus will come and right all wrongs. And so I can hang my faith on those two things. And even in those crises, I think, yeah, well, they're the two things I'm doubting. And I'm thinking, well, what are the alternatives? You know, really, we're just atoms and molecules. No one's in control. Everything's an illusion. Or I have an uncaring God. And I was sharing this morning, I was just listening to this podcast. It was fascinating. This woman, she was an Asian, and she explained how she came to a Christian faith. She said it was a whole problem of crisis, suffering, grief. She said, well, it comes down to, I see the statue of Buddha and he's detached. He's fat. He's very well fed and well nourished. He's had a very good life. And it's almost like he does not care about my suffering. And his solution is get over it. It's not real. It doesn't exist. It's an illusion. And just detach yourself. I'm detached. Or you see Jesus hanging on a cross in agony, suffering alongside with us. You think, that's the God I want to believe in. The God who comes to me, not the God who detaches himself from me and the God who knows exactly what I'm going through. And even Jesus had a crisis of faith. John the Baptist had a crisis of faith. John the Baptist goes to Jesus, I'm sorry, but are you the one, or are we meant to wait for someone else? Because not much seems to be happening right now with you. And even Jesus in the garden has that moment, God, really? Really? Do we have to? Really? So even Jesus has to go through that crisis of faith.
Yeah, thank you. What about this question? What does creative mode, you talked about creative mode with the nice kind of Minecraft analogy, creative mode versus survival mode. What does creative mode look like in a survival mode work environment?
Oh, you know, I so wish you guys had come into the Life at Work conference that we did with City Bible Forum yesterday. We had Eddie Wu, we had Steve McAlpine, we had Jenny George, and you had me, right? Okay, so that's where it all fell short, right?
You say that like it's a bad thing.
Like, no, it was. It's like, yeah, you know what? I know how it works. They had me first up. They had Eddie Wu last. I know how this works. They didn't begin with Eddie and end with me. Okay, I know how.
He's so modest and belittling.
No, I know how this works. I'm the guy that the latecomers can miss. But no one's going to miss Eddie Wu, right? Well, it is. Like we do live in toxic environments. And funny enough, all four speakers, we didn't consult with each other. We picked the book of Daniel to do our talks from because I think Daniel and his three friends, they had the ultimate workplace disruption. They had to work for the ultimate narcissist, toxic bully boss. And this boss micromanaged everything, the king of Babylon, to the point of, okay, you need to study from these teachers, read these books, these are the foods you need to eat, and I'm going to change your names. And the other guy goes, and I can throw you to the lions, right? So that's the workplace environment. Somehow, oh, where do I begin? Where do I end? First of all, pressure is a good thing. God uses pressure. There's what we know, the famous fear performance curve. Without fear, without pressure, without anxiety, we would not perform. It's a reason why they give us deadlines for essays. Without those deadlines, those essays are not going to happen. And it's a reason why PhDs take forever, because there is no deadline and there's no word count limit. That's why they go for 5, 10, 15 years. So we do need pressure. We need a challenge. We need a bit of anxiety. And God uses us. And I think go to God and say, okay, God, for such a moment, you've maybe put me here. Give me your wisdom. Give me your strength. Also knowing that Jesus is our ultimate boss. Whoever our crazy, toxic, bully, narcissist boss is, that's not the guy I'm really working for. I'm working for Jesus. He sees everything. He will right all wrongs. And also just, again, knowing that, okay, my crazy boss is crazy, but I'm going to be like Adam and Eve in the garden where work was a good thing. Work was not a curse. Work, yes, it's good, it pays the bills, but in the end, there's something inherently purposeful and satisfying in work. It's that feeling you get after you've mown the lawn, and you sit back and you look at it. It's that feeling you get after you've just washed the car, and you just want to enjoy the moment. You might even catch yourself taking a few pictures of your washed car. It's a feeling you get when you finally have your essay formatted in just the right font, paginated just how you want. It's that feeling you get when you get that Excel spreadsheet just set out, just right. Where does that feeling come from? It comes from the image of God, because that's how God felt on day 7 of creation as he sat back and go, oh, yes. And that's why we work. We have this crazy narcissist, toxic, insecure, proud boss. That's all right. Let him run around, do his own thing. But in the end, I'm going to be in the moment and enjoy this task for what it is, a chance to bring order out of chaos, beauty and imagination and image God through my work.
That's a really beautiful vision. And I think this next question really kind of segues off that nicely. One of the big sources of anxiety for me is anxiety creating people, parents, children, friends, bosses, clients, reporters, politicians, etc. Any solutions, Sam?
Well, that's such great insights on those questions. I keep quoting it, but really search this, family systems theory. Look for any podcast, any book, any person out there, family systems theory says it is relationships. Anxiety comes from relationships. And we all exist in relationships. So right now we're in a relationship, but we're triangulating because Chrissy's there, you're there, I'm here, triangulating, Steffi's there. So somehow I remember sitting down with a family systems therapist and they sat down, you are here, your wife is here, your kids are here, your parents are there, her parents are there. And then we had this whole network of relationships. And we worked out, okay, when this person overfunctions, it's forcing you to underfunction, now you're stressed, and it's forcing you to overfunction here, forcing this person underfunction, now they're stressed. So it's all this domino effect. So one, you have the questioner, you have diagnosed the issue for most of anxiety, it's relationships. Most of burnout at work happens because of relationships. It's relational stress. So one is recognizing the problem. What is here? Is this person overfunctioning, underfunctioning, forcing me to have to overfunction? What's going on here? Let me explain that. So overfunctioning, underfunctioning. If my job is to wash the dishes, if I don't wash the dishes, I'm underfunctioning, forcing Steph to overfunction, and now we're stressed. If she stacks the dishwasher and I go in and restack the dishwasher after her, woo, I'm overfunctioning, forcing her to underfunction. Now she's stressed and I'm stressed. So it's this back forth thing. If my kids have a science homework and I don't help them with it, I'm underfunctioning, they're stressed. But if I go and do all of it for them, now I'm overfunctioning. So it's all about recognizing what is going on here causing me stress. So describe the problem, understand the problem. Conflict resolution. Can you go to this person, be heard, be understood? If not, can we, I really think, can we seek professional help? Like professional help is the big one here. Whether it's a workplace thing, look for, it's a thing now. Reconciliation, workplace reconciliation. I think sooner rather than later, it's the fence at the top of the cliff rather than the ambulance at the bottom of the cliff. And really, I think sometimes we need mediators, third party, neutral third parties.
Same kind of ballpark, this next question. How does a person balance personal and professional responsibilities without reverting to survival mode?
Yeah, remember I said we have three choices in life. Choice number one is everything's out of control. There's no one behind the wheel. Choice number two, I have to control everything. I have to be behind the wheel. Goldilocks, just right. Just control what I need to control. What am I responsible for? Let God have the rest because he's in control. But how do we navigate? Not too hot, not too cold, just right. That's where Jesus says it's wisdom. It's really wisdom. But having a healthy sense of how big God is and how little we really are and how small we are in God's big plans. He's got it all under control. This morning, someone texted a similar question like, you know, but everything matters. Like whether I choose this job, whether I move here or don't move there, this school versus that school. In the end, you know what? It doesn't really matter as much as we think it does. And I was explaining, you know when you're in the HSC, you're in HSC survival mode. Everything you do is trying to get the maximum marks. Ooh, if I don't study today, I'm going to fall back. I'm going to lose 10 marks in my science. And then for those of us post-HSC, you think, what was all that about? Like, does anyone remember their HSC mark? No one's going to remember your HSC mark except you and your mother. And no one's going to ask you for your HSC mark except your mother telling everyone what your HSC mark was, right? But no, first thing you do when you get to uni is, no one's asking me what my HSC mark. Hey, does anyone want to know? Like, it was this. Suddenly, it does not matter. And I was explaining to another parent this morning, he was really stressed because his kids had just got into university in a course, but it was in this university, didn't get the marks again in this university, and I won't mention the names of the universities, but you know what they are, don't you? And I say, no, it's all right. In Australia, it actually doesn't matter. Like, I work as a doctor. No one in medicine is saying, hey, were you Newcastle, Sydney, New South, or Adelaide? No one is asking that. And if you do, you are that guy, right? So suddenly you realize these things do not matter as much. And we're all in our third, fourth, fifth careers, so it really didn't matter which one you picked as your first degree, your second degree. And so one, what we do doesn't matter that much. The other one is God is in way more control than we realize. And this morning I shared the stories of where Jesus says, the harvest, the harvest is out of control. It's plentiful. We need people out there harvesting. And we think Jesus is going to say, go, do it. I need you out there. Instead, Jesus says, chill, relax, pray, ask someone else to go. And I think, oh, that's one of my favorite verses in the Bible, right? And then the second story is Elijah on the mountain, all burnt out, all stressed. He's been running around. He's been doing everything. Now he's hiding on a mountain. And God goes to Elijah, 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 Elijah. What are you doing here? And Elijah goes, God, I tried everything, nothing happened, and now I'm the only one. And God goes, no, I've got 7,000 others out there just like you. What are you talking about? Just go, just anoint the next guy. I've already got your replacement lined up. And you think, wow, you know, he thought he was everything God's planned. He was, but just a small part. So we don't need as much control as we think we do. God's got it all under control, and we're not as big in God's plans as we think we are. And I know that's very humbling, but it's very freeing as well. We don't have to restack the dishwasher after God has stacked it.
Nice, nice.
But it's tempting, isn't it? Like, we all think, I would not have put that cup there. Really, forks there? Like, that's not going to dry.
There'll be always some areas where we're tempted to overfunction, right? Totally. So, next question. Is it ever a good thing to sacrifice one's own mental health for the sake of another person? You mentioned the question, Sam. They're going deep. Thanks for the good questions, everyone. That's a big question, isn't it? Like, what do you reckon?
Yeah, so am I over-functioning? And I think that's a very important question, like the important boundaries. Am I over-functioning? And at this point, am I really helping the other person, like by over-functioning and forcing them to under-function? So one, what we think is loving might not be that loving. It may have unintended negative consequences, us over-functioning. Can you just repeat the question again? Because
yeah,
I knew I wanted to say something else.
Is it ever a good thing to sacrifice one's own mental health for the sake of another person?
Yeah, and so the second thing then is, and sometimes it's not, they're not contradictory, they can be compatible and complementary. Like, by loving ourselves, we're actually loving the other person. So the Bible has that verse that says, husbands, love your wives in the same way you would love yourself. So somehow you think, okay, how do I look after myself? That's the same way I need to look after my wife. But the premise is I know how to look after myself. So self-care is very important and it gives us the foundation to care for others. But the third thing is, and I heard this from Jenny George in yesterday's conference, this is the fascinating thing. She said when we think self-care, practicing healthy habits, we think, okay, I'm going to book myself in for a spa, a massage, a manicure. I'm going to have a me day. But they've done studies. You have more positive health benefits from having a giving day, like going out there volunteering and giving. So, yes, it's good to take, but somehow there's something more beneficial about giving than taking. And they did studies where they gave people, say, $10, and one group they said, hey, here's $10, spend it on yourself. You know, buy yourself a coffee, go watch a movie, have a drink. The other group they said, here's $10, give it to someone, like give it to a homeless person, buy a toy for a kid, sponsor a child in poverty. This group had a little bump in happiness. This group had a major bump in happiness. So there's three things I think we need to juggle. I don't need to overfunction, something that sometimes that's hurting the other person. By caring for myself, I'm actually caring for the other person as well. But sometimes we'd be surprised by giving, by being generous. And as I said, it's more beneficial than taking. And as I said one or two weeks ago, and that makes sense if built in the rhythm and fabric of this universe, is a giving God, a God who came not to be served, but to serve. And if we image this God, then we're in the right place.
So sometimes it may be okay to sacrifice one's own mental health for the sake of another person because we're giving and probably improve our mental health.
Maybe. And as you sing, with all these things, these are wisdom questions. Mm. Yeah, and wisdom is the book of Proverbs. My favourite verse in Proverbs is give an answer, don't give an answer. You think, well, which one is it? Whoa, it's wisdom. And as Christians, often we think black, white, true, false, good, bad. But the Bible gives us this other area called wisdom. Are you in tune and where you hunt for the right note? You know, well, what is the rhythm that God has put me here? How can I find the right note?
But I like that underarching kind of framework of like actually to care for others, we need to learn to care for ourselves, right? That whole command of, love others as you love yourself. Like you said, it presumes we actually love ourselves, care for ourselves. And so it's a good foundation to come back to.
So my real favorite verse in the Bible, and you've heard this before, is John chapter 4, where it says, Jesus, tired as he was, sat down by the well. Like he did not want to go anymore. He was peopled out. He was tired. He was thirsty. And he sent his disciples into the town to do the shopping. Like, he did not want to do the shopping. So Jesus, the Son of God, the second person of the Trinity, gets tired. It's okay to get tired and sit down by the well and have a drink. You're imaging God at that moment.
That's beautiful. Okay. I think this is the last question, unless there's any more coming in quickly. Is it a noble goal to teach a child positive mental habits to avoid anxiety, or does suffering anxiety build character that is better in the long run?
Well, it's a both ends, and it all depends what we mean by anxiety. This morning we talked about there's good anxiety, there's bad anxiety. So there's this grid. You can have a reasonable fear or an unreasonable fear. And the Bible talks about reasonable fear. Like, Jesus was anxious about things. Paul was anxious to see the people he was writing to. So that's a reasonable, rational fear. But they're irrational fears. And the opposite is, you can have rational calm and irrational calm. There are times you're calm when you should not be calm. Like, the exam is tomorrow. You should be studying right now. That's an irrational calm. So there's healthy anxiety. And it's good that kids learn healthy anxiety. And they need to learn what's unhealthy as well. So that is important. Also, it's important that we give them these good rhythms, these good routines that Dr. Jenny George talked about, because it fills their mental fitness tank. So it means they're less likely to break down under crisis, under stress. Suffering in itself is not a bad thing. Viktor Frankl, Man's Search for Meaning, says we shouldn't look for suffering, but suffering will find us, and we become better people for it. If there's a purpose to the suffering, and that's where the belief in a God who's got everything under control can really help us navigate that. Dr. Jenny George, because the question mentions resilience, what do we mean by resilience? Anyway, it is the buzzword right now. What do you mean by, on the one hand, when you fall down, you can get back up. But she says it's bigger than that. It's character. It's virtue. It's who I am. And that's part of parenting, isn't it? Where we don't try to protect our children. And they say one of the reasons why there's so much anxiety, depression, stress is children can't navigate anxiety because they have a perfectly safe world. So they go from zero to dangerous, but no shades of grey in the middle, right? So you either zero to, okay, I'm broken, but they don't know how to navigate these. And it's amazing, right? Because I want my kids to light a candle. They cannot light a candle because now it's these oven timers that little fingers can't operate. What is going on? Do you remember Chinese restaurants? They had matches in the middle of the table, and during dinner you'd be bored, so you could play with matches and you'd be flicking these matchsticks that fly and light the tablecloths, and no one would care because that was normal. That's what kids do. So somehow you've got to navigate kids through a dangerous world. You can't keep everything safe for them. So we went to parenting seminars, and they were big. You got to let your kids have danger. They got to climb trees. They got to break bones. They got to get dirty. They got to get sick. Don't helicopter a parent. Let them sort out these things all for themselves. So there's a lot of truth in that. We have to help our kids navigate a dangerous, physical, broken, suffering world. But the important thing is knowing that we are there for them, and there's a purpose behind it. It's not a purposeless thing. And also what is an irrational fear versus what is a rational fear. And we have to role model that, don't we? Which is by being a calm, non-anxious presence in their life. Which we have because Jesus is the calm, non-anxious presence in our life. That was Mary and Martha. Jesus, the calm, non-anxious presence in Mary's life.
Nice. Well, that's answered all our questions beautifully. Thank you so much,
Thanks,
Sam.
Thanks, Andrew. Thanks for having me.
That was awesome. It's